This is the Live Feed. It's your connection to live music and entertainment in Winona. Support for this program is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
On today's show, Terry Tenseth interviews two comedians from the Twin Cities area. One was the 2008 winner of the Minnehaha Comedy Competition, and the other began his career in Los Angeles and has since toured with the Lewis Black Nothing Sacred Tour in 2005 and performed in the Aspen Comedy Festival. Stick around and catch part of their live sets from Boobs Comedy Night in Winona.
This is a special edition of the Live Feed. I have John Wilson, and I'm going to not murder your name, Chell Bjorgen. You're here performing at Boob's big comedy show. You like comedy. You're in it. So what made you say, I'm going to try being a stand-up comedian?
For me, it's something I've always loved and always wanted to do. And I was working in a cubicle and turned 30 years old and hated it. So I always wanted to do it. And so I started going to open mics. And
Same kind of story. I was graduated from college, started off in a cubicle, and for 2 years felt like I was dying inside and didn't know why. Chose to move to LA to become an actor and then fell into stand-up comedy and discovered that I was much more comfortable on stage than off stage, and to have that connection with the audience seemed to be more pure than anything I've ever done. So it kind of became a drug and was just very easy to get addicted to.
What did your family think of you going into comedy? Was positive reactions, negative reactions, funny reactions?
I'm not sure what they think. I don't know where I got my sense of humor. I think I was always a weird kid growing up. Nowadays, like, they congratulate me, but I think they worry a lot too. I have a very extremely conservative religious family, and so they worry about me. Gosh, I'm not nearly as good at this as you are, Chell. You're so eloquent. You're so eloquent. I'm not eloquent. I don't know. I really don't know. They were visiting this week, and we talked a little bit about it, about me doing stand-up. They're going to come see me next week for the first time ever, and I'm kind of nervous about that, but they're actually a lot more nervous than I am, so we'll see after that.
And for me, the response was, you know, it's Norwegian family, so they were supportive and generic about it and said, you should follow your dreams. That's really great. And my dad had a kind of a different reaction. He said, you can make people laugh at the water cooler. It's the same kind of thing. And I'm like, no, it's not the same kind of thing. And I knew that before I started. And then once I did, I realized it's a lifestyle, and it's a hard way of life. But the family was always supportive, and whatever caution they had, they never expressed it to me. And, you know, it was they're always good and normal.
Great. Where are you guys pulling your material from? Personal experiences, friends' experiences? And how often do you write? How often do you rewrite?
For me, yeah, I think it's personal experiences. Almost all of it is. You change things up because some things aren't as funny as they could be in real life. And so you change things around. But yeah, I think almost everything that I do is based on something that's happened to me. I don't write as much as I should, but I keep my phone with me all the time. I have something, you know, I can make notes on my phone. And so I'm always like jotting down notes to myself all the time, but I don't like, I sit down sometimes and I'll rework material, but just trying to sit down and write material from scratch, I've never been able to do it. You know, I can sit for hours and it's just nothing funny. And then you're driving along and you see something or a thought pops in your head and then it turns into a great joke.
Yeah, it's definitely, for me, it's personal life experiences. I wish I was more of a joke writer, but I'm not. It's kind of the absurdities of life and human behavior is what I write about. I haven't written anything new for quite some time, which is frustrating, but, usually when I would sit down and write, it was listening to music that I loved, and it just kind of was stuff that was odd to me, and then I would just take it to the stage and work off the reaction of the audience, and kind of, it was an in-the-moment kind of process that from the response I got, that I would kind of expand with it and play with the crowd, and you record your sets and then you adjust and adjust once again. But that was a while back. I haven't been doing that for quite some time, unfortunately.
What have been some of the biggest learning experiences, maybe awkward or embarrassing moments you've come across, and how do you get past that?
awkward or horrible experiences is part of the process. You know, being a stand-up comic is a humiliating kind of experience in a lot of ways. I mean, you discover who you are. I learned more about myself, more than I ever knew was there when I started doing stand-up. But getting opening for a black comic named John Witherspoon, who was on Friday Movies. It was an all-black audience, and the last thing I want to see was a white Norwegian guy go up there, and I was booed off stage at 7 minutes. And it was awful to have that collective energy at you when they hated you. And kind of affected my psyche. But then when you talk about it with other comics, you learn that everyone experiences that, and that's part of the game. But you end up growing from it and becoming stronger from it if you don't dwell on the negatives, which is an easy thing to do when you're alone on the road all the time. So yeah, it's a huge thing to overcome. But once you're able to laugh at that stuff, it makes other stuff in life that's painful become easier to deal with in a weird way.
For me, I think naturally I just beat myself up a lot. So it's really hard for me to feel good when things aren't going great. And I used to be just, you know, even if a show went great, I would just, you know, I would find fault with something. But there's a club in Minneapolis where I used to get a lot of, well, I still get a lot of guests. That's there, the Joke Joint Comedy Club in Minneapolis. And when they first got started, sometimes I would get guest sets on Friday nights for the late show. And that, you know, a lot of comedians will tell you that's the toughest show to do, the Friday night late show. I remember once there was a small crowd, and I did a guest set, just really struggling. And I was talking to a headliner afterwards, and he said, you know, you can go to a room that's really, you know, the crowd is excited and hot and ready to laugh. And he said, but you're going to get better as a comedian doing this. When you're struggling, when you're working, when you have to, you know, when it's not easy. And so now, you know, when I have to struggle, now I try to think to myself, I'm not great at it, but I'm much better than I used to be. I think, yeah, this is a really great, like a show goes terrible and I go, this is a great learning experience. I'm so much better now than I was before this happened because of this. Yeah, it happens all the time. You know, jokes don't go like you want, or the crowd is just really talkative, or the room isn't set up great. And when you have to work through that, you become better.
Have you ever like crossed a line, any of you? Let's say where you went somewhere when the audience was just like, ooh, and you felt like there was no coming back from that.
For me, that doesn't really happen because I'm so clean. And generally, I mean, my show is very clean. I normally don't go places that are super dark or super, I don't know, gross or super sexual. So
yeah, I haven't either. I wish that I did, I mean, because I think that's part of the job as a comedian is to take those risks and to isolate the crowd and to go to a dark place and challenge them and challenge yourself. Unfortunately, I haven't. I've never done that, and I wish that I have. You know, there are times when, you know, you don't do well, and then you learn from that and kind of learn how to be more aggressive. Aside from just being booed off stage, there's nothing I've really said that has offended people where they just look at you and they're horrified. But I think that a comic should do that every now and again because that's what they're supposed to do every now and again.
Okay, cool. What's it like being in the Minnesota comedy scene? Like, how do you feel? What kind of an environment is it, do you think, for artists such as yourselves? Is it good? Do you think it needs to expand more?
I think it's fantastic. I don't have any complaints. We just did a lot of clubs do contests during the summer because it's hard to bring crowds in during the summer, but people will, they'll come out for contests for whatever reasons, and we just had a contest at one of the clubs, ended a couple of weeks ago, and I emceed the two semifinal nights, and so I think there was 8 comedians in each show, and I got off stage after emceeing that, and I was like, this is a fantastic scene. I think there's, you know, you can get on stage almost every night of the week if you really work at it. Maybe not when you're starting out. It's a little harder to get stage time. But if you keep trying, you can get stage time. And there's places all over Minnesota. Like right now we're down in Winona doing a show. And so there's lots of opportunities around the state and also in the Twin Cities. And I think somebody told me a while ago that the Twin Cities has more theater seats per capita than any other city. Not more theater seats than, say, New York or Los Angeles or whatever, but more per capita.
Okay.
And so Minnesota, I think, loves its artists and nurtures them. Maybe it's because it's so brutal to live here. I don't know, but...
Yeah, the comedy scene in Minneapolis is thriving. It's, you know, it has its surges where there are times when there's really not much going on, but right now it's at its peak from since I've ever lived there. There are so many different clubs and smaller rooms to go develop, and the attitude is of all the performers and the people that book the rooms are so supportive and open to whatever. Like, there's, I think, three different clubs in Minneapolis plus smaller rooms. So it's a huge, huge place. I think viewed across the country as a lot of comics will come and move here to develop. Just like Austin. I'm not sure where else, but then they get their chops and they move to New York or LA. But right now, Minneapolis is unbelievable for a comedy scene.
Okay, who have you learned the most from? Do you have mentors?
For me, I got really lucky. Early on, just 3 years in, I met Louis Anderson, and I got to be on a show with him. He spent a lot of time with me. Just, it's not just about comedy, but I saw him recently, and he has good life advice. That, you know, he said something to me just recently that has really helped me. He said, you know, don't ever judge yourself by what other people say about you. Only you know who you really are. And that has been, I think I've been thinking about that a lot. So I was really lucky to meet him, and his influence on me has been.
Yeah, for mentors, it's basically my friends that I see who are constantly on the road and succeeding through comedy. I don't really have any mentors that I look up to because I've been doing it for so long now that it's just, it's basically my friends like, Chad Daniels, who was doing really well, Tim Harmston, Mary Mack. These are comics that have been doing it and have been really successful and working hard and finding their voice and doing really well with them.
There's a lot of comedy out there where there's a lot of profanity, and you mentioned your show, John, is pretty clean. A lot of profanity, a lot of vulgarity, and I know that there's a place for that, but what are your viewpoints on it?
Everyone has their own opinion, and to do comedy clean is the most difficult, challenging thing to do. I'm not that clean, and I don't really second guess myself, or, you know, I'm not really proud of it, but I'm not really ashamed of it. You know, Louis C.K. is somewhat dirty, but he's honest, and that's how he talks off stage. And I think that if that's who you are, then bring it to the stage, and that's the most important thing, is to be honest and raw, and that's what people are going to respond to.
Yeah, I agree 100% with what Chell just said about being honest and be who you are on stage. I don't know if I ever made a conscious decision that I was going to be clean. It's just kind of who I am. My favorite comedian has always been Brian Regan, who's known as a really clean comedian. But and also I found very early on that you can get a lot of opportunities if you can write clean. Some club owners have told me that, and bookers have told me that. You'll have a lot more opportunities being clean early than being dirty. But yeah, I respect any comedian that pours themselves into what they do and speaks honestly and is authentic. I think what's more offensive than somebody being profane or vulgar is somebody not being who they are. Yeah, I mean, I think in any art form, when you recognize that somebody has poured themselves into it, I think that's what people respond to. And music, or when you get a feeling that they're not doing what they think is going to sell, but they're doing, like, they're really performing from their soul, I think people respond to that.
I think it's hard to say it's not an art form because you have to write, right? And then you have to worry about timing too. Mm-hmm. And when people say that they write comedy, they say that's the most challenging part of it because you have to have the timing down in your script and then you have to enact it. And if you don't do it right, you could have a really funny line, but then if it's not delivered correctly, you can completely lose somebody. Now, there's comedy festivals, right? Are those contests, or how are those run? Because I know I go to art festivals to get stuff for my job, but everybody's at a booth and they're selling stuff. But how does that really go down?
You know, festivals for the most part are not contests, which is great because anytime it's a contest or a competition, it turns into a show where comics bring a whole bunch of their friends and it's based off the audience reaction, so it's not really legitimate. Festivals are different. They're, depending on what they are, they're much more selective. In the same right, more challenging because the pressure is is way more intense. And that's where I struggled was, you know, I was in the Aspen Comedy Festival, Montreal Comedy Festival, and Chicago. And that's when I realized that comedy isn't just a fun kind of way of connecting with people. It turned into a high pressure situation where, you know, you get lost in your head and it turns into almost the opposite of what you got into it for. It's a weird experience to be a part of those festivals because it's so rare to be acknowledged and recognized as a stand-up. It happens like once every couple of years if you get a TV credit or a festival that's really well respected. So you're happy that you're recognized and you're doing something right. But for me, it exacerbated my anxiety and my panic attacks, and it kind of had the opposite effect and turned me into kind of a guy that was frozen and not loose and not there to have fun. But it's a great experience, and that's where the great comics come from, because they deal with the pressure and then they rise above it and they become even stronger, and that's why the best comics are successful. It's dealing with that pressure.
So let's say there's an 18-year-old kid and he's doing a theater major. I'm kidding. Somebody wants to do what you're doing, right? What's your best advice out there?
Advice is, you know, every young comic is so needy, and I was more needy than anything. I think there is no right or wrong way. I just get in as much stage time as you can. That's all that matters. Trying to stay away from hacky materials. Try to be original. And the more stage time you get, the more you find your voice. It really is that simple. The only advice is to get as much stage time as you can. Work as hard as you can. Write an hour a day, which is, that's one of the biggest challenges is the discipline. Writing every day and then getting on stage as much as you can. If you do that and you're meant to be a comic, then everything else falls into place. So every opportunity that you're looking for, when you have no idea how to get there, all that stuff falls into place if you just find your voice and work hard. And it's weird when you first start because you have no idea what you're doing and you're constantly changing and growing, but you don't know that at the time. So if you just perform as much as you can and hungry and stay diligent and focused, then that's all that you need to know as a young comic.
Yeah, I agree with that. I read a book, it was called Talent is Overrated, and it really helped me get past the idea that I've believed this like in my heart, but I've never seen anybody else say it or read a book about it. The idea is that basically you can be anything you want to be. It's not about some innate inborn talent. And so I would say to anybody that if you really want to do stand-up comedy, you can do it. If you want to. And the other thing that this book talked about that was really helpful to me was talking about how it's not just how much you practice, but the way that you practice. And so Chell was talking about getting on stage as much as you can. And I think that that is definitely vital. If you want to make that work for you a little bit more than it might work for other people, it's make the most of every opportunity, not just get on stage and do the same thing that you've done, but get on stage and push yourself just a little bit every time. I mean, the first several months that you're doing stand-up comedy, just getting on stage continually is probably good enough. But then at some point, maybe you start to have a comfort zone. And when you push yourself to the edge of that comfort zone, when you can do that and try to do that every day if you can, and whether it's in the way that you write or work or think about comedy or practicing on stage, like if you can just push yourself. But what he said is absolutely right as far as just the more you do it, and if you love it and if you keep doing it, it will all come together, I think.
Well, thanks, Jill. Thanks, John.
That's good. Thank you.
Yep. Welcome to the Big Boobs Comedy Show. Saturday night, let's hear it.
All right, tonight we got a great show lined up for you. Your headliner tonight, Mr. Chell Borgen, featuring John Wilson. Keep it up for him.
What is up with this town, man? Everybody keeps saying boobs, right? It's like this whole town has Tourette's. I went over to the grocery store. I was like, I'm trying to find bubs. And the guy goes, boobs. Why did you say that? Well, I asked somebody else. I was upstairs, there was this couple talking, and this woman goes, does boobs make their own beer? And I was like, well, first of all, you need to learn to speak English. It's do boobs. make their own beer. And I guess it depends on how much beer a woman drinks. This is Winona. I don't know if there's a lot to do down here. I'm guessing some women are giving it a shot tonight. Just raise your glass. I love movies. Last week, I was feeling sick. And I was saying to myself, probably just a cold, no big deal. And then I went to see the movie Contagion. That's not a good idea. Let me give you some advice. If you're saying to yourself, probably just a little under the weather, no big deal, don't go watch Contagion. Because that's what everybody in that movie says. And then everyone dies. Right? Don't worry, I'm not giving anything away. You can figure out who's going to live and who's going to die in most movies, I think. Like, remember Little House on the Prairie? That's what it's like. It's like Laura shows up at school with her new friends, Sarah and Jim. You're like, I've never seen Sarah and Jim before. You're not going to see them again either. Sarah and Jim are going to get smallpox. I love Minnesota where you can do the Little House humor. It's awesome. I saw a review for Lion King 3D. Do you guys know what this is about? They put it in 3D, and there was this review. This critic said, you know, the only thing the 3D really adds is depth. Yep. That's the third D. My brother always calls me for movie advice, and I told him, I said, you should watch X-Men. He goes, that's a stupid movie. Those mutations are not realistic at all. Good point. He goes, in real life, if you had a mutation, you'd have like six fingers, or you'd be mentally challenged. I was like, well, that would make a horrible movie. What happens in that movie? It's like, hey, man, what's your mutation? I like to eat crayons. I don't want to see that movie. I like to make fun of my brother because he's an idiot. And, like, here's a fun game to play. If you have a friend that you like to pick on or tease or a family member, just say to them, go, hey, did you know that according to the internet, it is impossible to fart and breathe in at the same time? And then just sit back and watch the fun. That's an okay joke, right? But the reason I love doing it is because I know there's at least one or two guys here tonight who, on the way home, gonna give it a shot. I did it a couple weeks ago. There was a guy sitting up front. He goes, I'm trying right now. I was like, you're sitting too close to the stage, sir. My joke has backfired on me. And I am never coming back to Wisconsin. I didn't grow up around here. I'm not a Vikings fan. I am a Bears fan. Sorry. When I moved to the Twin Cities, I found a place where I can watch the Bears games with all the other Bears fans. There's a bar in St. Paul. I told my buddy, I go, I found this great Bears bar. And if you're wondering if that's where this is going, you're right. For those of you who don't know, I didn't know, in the gay community, a bear is another word for a large, hairy, gay man. So I go, I found a really great Bears bar. And he goes, good for you. I go, yeah, I'm a big fan. He's like, how does your wife feel about that? I'm like, she loves him too. I've got psoriasis on my hands. You guys might have noticed this. Makes my hands dry. It's not a big deal. Like, my skin will get cracked sometimes and irritated. And I've got a buddy. He goes, oh, that's horrible. I used to have psoriasis on my hands. Makes it look like you've been masturbating all day. I was like, wow, that never crossed my mind. Why would you say that? He goes, well, is it awkward for you? I'm like, no, it's not awkward. I just have to remember to take hand lotion wherever I go. See where you're going with this. So my parents took me to the doctor when I was in the third grade. He looked at my hands and said, your son has psoriasis. What my parents heard was, your son has cirrhosis. Very different. Like, cirrhosis is a disease that a third grader could get if that third grader were a raging alcoholic. So I got spanked for that. Like, that's going to fix my drinking problem. Right? My dad used to lie to us all the time when we were kids. He'd say, you know what, we're really poor. We don't have a lot of money, but we love each other. That makes us feel like we're rich. Nope. I felt like I lived in a trailer. There's not enough love to make that feel like a double wide. I was a weird kid. You guys ever, I was always weird. You ever get one of these looks from your dad? Like, so my dad always looked at me. Gonna do comedy, Dad. Oh, good idea. Sure, you'll be great. My wife and I, we got a hot tub this summer. We got it installed. I was pretty excited about that. It was like, oh boy, gonna be lots of sexy fun in the hot tub. I was thinking, like, well, the first people she invited over to enjoy our new hot tub were her brother and his wife and their four children. Like, I had been thinking that, you know, getting a hot tub, it's sexy. It's like buying a sports car, right? And turns out it's more like buying a minivan. It's just fun for the whole family, except for me. And I was nervous that these kids were going to pee in my hot tub. And the mom is there, and she goes, look, our youngest is 5 years old. She's old enough not to pee in your hot tub. I was like, well, I'm 34. And I'm not confident that I'm not going to pee in my hot tub. How would you know? It's already hot. Like, hey, did my hot tub just get slightly warmer? And the guy that installed it, I was talking to him about it. He goes, you don't have to worry. There's a chemical in there. If anybody pees, it'll turn purple. I was like, are you serious? He goes, no, you're an idiot. Touche. So our niece was there, and she said, do you have any kids in the neighborhood that I can play with? And I was like, well, you know, we haven't lived here that long. I'm not sure. She goes, would you find out, like, I'm supposed to go around our neighborhood? Hey, how you doing? I just moved in. Do you have children? We could use some. You guys are looking at me. You're probably thinking to yourselves, here's a guy that likes to go to the gym. And you're right about that. I do. I'm in training right now for a new winter Olympic sport. It's the luge. The downhill sledding. But this is just for fat guys. It's called the Biggest Loser. Here we go. I am working out. That part is true because I had a wake-up call. My wake-up call happened to me at Walmart, which I think probably any time you're at Walmart, you should have some sort of a wake-up call. You should say to yourself, what wrong decisions have I made? And now I'm at Walmart. That joke was brought to you by Target. I did have a wake-up call. Specifically, what happened was I couldn't find pants that fit me at Walmart. And I look at my wife. I go, I'm going to have to start shopping at the Big and Tall. And she goes, the Big and Tall? Maybe you should find a Big or Tall. My wife likes to pick on me. And this is true. Like, I've been working out now like a year. I've lost 10 pounds so far. And that's awesome. I get applause for losing an amount of weight that I could have lost accidentally. Did I mention it took a year? Did I say that part? And I said to my wife, I said, I'm slimming down, you know? I'm not going to be able to do fat jokes much longer, right? Like, I'm going to have to rewrite a lot of material. She goes, listen, don't worry about it, John, okay? It's all right. You can lose a lot of weight and still be pretty fat. One woman, at one show I did, a woman got upset at me. And after the show, she goes, listen, you don't need to put yourself down like that, okay? You don't need to do that self-deprecating humor. You're bigger than that. I was like, well, you're really bad at talking. So you shouldn't do that anymore. Right? My philosophy is that whoever you are, you know, whatever you look like, you should embrace yourself. You should have fun with yourself. Probably not the best way to phrase that. Enjoy being who you are, right? Like, I went to Borders bookstore. There was this guy signing a book he had written. It was called 30 Steps to Your Perfect Body. And I was like, I bet I can mess with this guy. I just go up to him like, hey, man, your book changed my life. I've been through it twice already. So I had one friend who talked me into going to a Weight Watchers meeting. I went to one Weight Watchers meeting, and I'm sitting there, and I'm looking around. I'm like, I don't think this works. I did, and so my friend, she said, you should try Weight Watchers online, and it's a lot cheaper if you do it online. It turns out it's a lot easier if you do it online, too. My avatar is down to 140. That's going pretty well. And my wife, she just got a scale for our bathroom because she doesn't want me to be happy. And I'm standing on that scale, and I'm not really excited about what it says. And I learned something. I don't know if this is biology or physics. I don't understand how this works, but if you lean forward, like on your tiptoes, on your scale, you can lose 6 pounds instantly. Which is fantastic, because I went to Subway and this guy goes, do you want a 6-inch or a foot long? And I was like, I should probably get a 6-inch. Hold on. I think I just made room for a foot long. Which you should never say out loud at Subway. They have no idea what you're talking about. I go to my doctor a lot because I'm kind of a hypochondriac, and the nurse weighs me in every time I go there. And last time I was there, she's writing my weight on the chart. I go, do you have to write my weight down every single time? Like, couldn't you just put a frowny face? Your weight makes me sad. And then I get in to see my doctor, and she goes, well, John, do you eat healthy? I'm like, that's a stupid question. Like, I don't know how to answer that. I could tell you how much fast food I ate this week, or I could just take off my shirt and jump up and down. See what you're dealing with here. What I said was, I don't know, doc. Maybe I've overdone it a little bit on the broccoli and the yogurt. Why is this happening to me? She did some blood work, and she said, looks pretty good. Your potassium is a tad low. You might want to eat a banana. I was like, well, I haven't had a banana in 8 years. That's just now getting low? But I will definitely eat a banana by March. Because you don't want to go back to your doctor and she's like, John, did you eat your banana? No. Did you have any fruit at all? Starburst. Does that count? I found out a few years ago that I have the same birthday as one other famous celebrity, Saddam Hussein. And this is true. This is true because on December 30th, 2008, Saddam was executed. And I also had a bad day. And what happened to me was I went to McDonald's. I ordered some chicken McNuggets. They forgot to give me my sauce. I was like, I should just hang myself now. I woke up a few weeks ago. I had to do a show, and I woke up in the morning. I had this long scratch right down my face. I roll over, and I look at my wife, and I go, did you scratch me? And she's like, we have a cat. Like, that explains it. I was like, no, I think you did it. I think you looked at me in the middle of the night, and you thought to yourself, if I disfigure you, then no other woman will ever try to take you away from me. My wife is originally from Minnesota, so you guys know what that means, right? Passive aggressive, right? Like the kind of woman who will look at you like, I want to rip your face off. Scratch. We were watching TV the other day. There was a story about terrorism. And she looked at me and she said, I think that it's time that we stop profiling people. And I'm like, I think that it's weird that you would say that. Because just the day before that, when our Girl Scout cookies disappeared, I was the only suspect. I'm like, we have a cat. Bigot. Hey, thanks so much. I'm John Wilson. Thank you.
John Wilson, everybody. This next comedian, you've seen him on Comedy Central and on the poster behind me. Please give it up for Mr. Kjell Bjorgen.
Let's keep it going, huh?
You guys, I've gotten fat. I've gained 30 pounds. Yeah, that's why I said 30. 30 pounds in the last year. That's aggressive. And it's all in my face and in my neck and in my gut right here. I was talking to my nephew, and he's 4 years old, and I'm like, hey, Sutton, look at this. I got a baby inside. I got a baby growing inside. And he goes, that's not a baby. He's all pissed off for no reason. And I go, well, what is it? And he goes, lots of treats. And I'm like, yeah, that's right, lots of treats. Lots of vodka sandwiches right inside here. That's why it's hard and distended. It's such a fun age when they're 4 years old. They're so pure and innocent, you know what I mean? You guys have babies here in Winona? They're so fun and innocent. But when they're not that innocent, though, because I had to babysit him for the first time when he was 3.5 years old. Did you know this little fun fact? They get erections. Yeah. Wasn't prepared for that one right there. We were watching the Vikings game, and all of a sudden he goes, Uncle Chell, look at my penis. It's standing straight up. I'm like, I'm not looking anywhere. I don't want any part of this conversation right now. I was frozen. And he keeps insisting. He's so excited. Uncle Chell, look at my penis. It's standing straight up. I'm like, no, that's your penis for you. 30 seconds goes by of complete silence. That's a long time when you're sitting next to a 3.5-year-old with an erection for the first time. Do you know what I mean? That's an eternity. So I just do a little glance, a little peripheral, right? Just a peripheral. That's allowed, right? And he's looking down. He goes, it's huge. True story. I love that age. They're so fun, you know? They puke, though. They puke all the time, don't they, little kids? They're like dogs. They just puke all the time. Do you remember your kid and you puke? It's a really traumatic, overwhelming experience. You're so sad. You're just, it's the end of the world. I had to go pick him up at the nursery school because he puked. Because my brother has a job and I don't. So I walk in and he's sitting in the nurse's office and his head's down. And he's just sad. And I go, Sutton, you okay? What happened? And he goes, a hot dog fell out of my mouth. And that's when I got it, like, why you guys have kids. Because you want to protect them. Like, you want to nurture them. Like, it's just such a, you're living for someone else. But then they get older and they suck. I have a little sister who's 9 years old. Does anyone have a 9-year-old here? When they're 9 years old, they have an attention-seeking constitution that is relentless. All my sister says is, watch me or look at this. That's all she ever says. Watch me. Look at this. Look at this. Watch me. Look at this. Look at this. Look at this. Watch me. Look at this. Look at this. Watch me. Look at this. And the annoying part is I'm watching her. I am, what do you not see right here? I am watching you. It's like, what more can I do as a human being? I'm, watch, right here, windows to the soul. You myopic little monkey, I'm watching you. Shut up. It's this weird OCD and it just doesn't stop. Look at this, watch me, look at this. Look at this, look at that. Look at that, look at that. They're not even doing anything in the first place. Look at this, what number is that? What number is that? Shut up. Honestly, it makes you want to drive drunk on Halloween. Oh, yeah, look at Superman fly, huh? Look at him go. Manslaughter's fun, you guys. It's not a felony. It's a joke, you guys. You guys believe in spanking? By round of applause, who believes in spanking kids? Okay, who opposes spanking kids? By round of applause. I don't have kids, so I really, it's not my place to say, but here's what I do, and this isn't a joke, I really do this, so let me know what you think of this, all right? When my sister is in my face, annoying, not paying attention, I honestly enjoy sneezing in the faces of small children. You sneeze right in their face, because nothing usurps the attention of a 10 or 11-year-old better than a sneeze to the face. They don't know how to take it, you know what I mean? They're confused. But they stop whatever stupid they're doing. They do. They stop and they're focused and they're alert. It's like airborne Ritalin. Like, it's effective, you guys. Airborne Ritalin. So if you guys are getting frustrated with your kids, you don't grab them. You don't, oh, you don't shake them like the nanny does. No, you don't. You sneeze in their face, okay? Because what you're doing is you're getting the venom out in a refreshing sea mist. So if you guys have kids, I advise sneezing in the face, but you have like a small window of opportunity, like a 5 times of pure joy and bliss. Because the last time I did it, I knew the jig was up. Because this is what happened. She's like, no, I don't like my Fruity Pebbles. And I felt a sneeze coming. I'm like, this is perfect. So I sneezed right in her face. And without missing a beat, she stood up and she turned and she farted on me. I'm like, this kid's going to be all right. She's going to be okay. My work here is done. I was just in Wausau, Wisconsin, performing at the... Really? Did you woo Wausau? Someone was excited about Wausau? Have you been? Have you been there? I was performing at the Best Western. It was a sea of old people. It was nothing but 90-year-old people. And there, listen to me. There are two types of old people, all right? I enjoy old people, but there are two types. There are nice, sweet old people that enjoy cookies and tea. And then there are mean, vicious old people that are pissed that they're still alive, basically, is where they're at. And you can tell they have an indicator because they all have Winnie the Pooh sweatshirts on. Look out for them, man. They'll bite your heads off.
They all have Winnie the Pooh sweatshirts on. I have a theory. There's one thing you can give to an old person in a Winnie the Pooh sweatshirt to make them less angry, and that is coleslaw. Old people love coleslaw. Everyone hates coleslaw, but old people. That's like porn to an old person. They cannot get enough of that greasy cabbage. It's like, nom, nom. And there you go, Pooh. My name is Chell. It's Chell. Spelled K-J-E-L-L. Pronounced Chell. No one ever gets it right. I understand it's difficult. Whatever. I was at my other work where we're a name tag, because I'm a winner. And it's spelled out clearly in puffy paint, K-J-E-L-L. And this customer looks up. This is true. He goes, K-J-E-L-L. Is it couch? How do you get couch out of K-J? I'm like, yeah, that's my first name is Couch. My parents named me Couch. How did you know that the J-E-L-L part of the name is totally silent? And it's pronounced ouch, too. You just whip that in there out of nowhere. Every year on the first day of school is always the same annoying ordeal when teachers go through roll call and they go through all the normal names. Damon and Paul. Every time they got to my name, I always knew because every teacher had the same stupid reaction every time. Wow. this is a stumper. Is it kill? Is there a kill out there? That's what a teacher said, kill. I'm like, yeah, right here, kill. Last name's you. And what is a love affair? Every time I meet you guys, everyone does the same thing. I'm like, hi, my name is Chell. Everyone goes, oh, shell, like a seashell. And I go, no, it's Chell. It's like a C-H, Chell. Oh, shell. No, that's S-H, as a fuck that doesn't fucking listen, mother. It's just my name. My whole life is a challenge. I have an identical twin brother. Everyone's like, what's your brother's name? What's your brother's name? His name is Trygve. T-R-Y-G-V-E. Trygve. My name is Chell. My parents' names? John and Jean. Assholes, right? Identical twin brother. Are they twins? Applaud if you're a twin in the audience. You guys are intrigued by twins. We understand this. It's a rare, unique bond. But everyone's like, wow, you're a twin. That's so cool. Do you guys have ESP? Like, can you read each other's minds? Or if I punch you, will he feel it? I had one instance, and this is bizarre. It was a Friday night, just like last night. And unbeknownst to me, my brother went out and got completely drunk. He was just hammered. That same night, I had sex with a really ugly chick. It's like Twilight Zone, you guys. I was totally sober. My brother gets drunk a lot. People always ask stupid questions. I asked, there was twins in the audience, and they were fraternal. It was a boy and a girl, and people asked them if they're identical. Yeah, we're identical. We have identical penises and vagina. We're hermaphroditical twins is basically where we're at. My brother's older by 5 minutes, and apparently those 5 minutes gave him the ability to succeed in life. Because he was better at everything. Like, that's the case for most twins. Usually the older twin excels by just a smidge. And he was better at everything. He got better grades in school. He was better at sports. This goes back to birth. Because my parents didn't know that I was coming. They weren't expecting me. They thought they were just having my brother. That's awesome. I crashed my own birth. That feels good. That's a great way to end the world. So he comes out like, oh, look at our little baby. We love him. He's got success in his eyes. This is our fella. And this is what the doctor said word for word. This is true. The doctor said, wait, there's something more. There's something more. Like I'm some beast or creature of unknown species or origin. He's a licensed physician saying there's something more. Like, why not just say, hold on here. We've got some afterbirth, and it's taken human form. My brother's wrapped up in a warm, cozy blanket. They put me in a bedpan. That was my welcome mat to the world. It was a bedpan. They put me in a bedpan. I'm like, I'm freezing. I'm freezing. Can I get some gauze or something? Can you do anything for me? I remember the worst day of my life. This is true. My bro and I played football in high school. And at the end of the season, they give out the awards to all the players. My brother got all the awards. He was captain of the football team. I wasn't. He was MVP. He broke the rushing record as the running back. He got all conference. You know what I got? I got a cute little certificate that says honorable mention. Have you heard of that? Do you know what that means? That means nice try, Rudy. That's what that means. Good hustle. Good hustle, loser. Why don't you go find your friend Lucas and play with bugs, okay? Because you're a nerd. So we're walking out. He's got all these trophies and awards. I've got this stupid piece of bark with calligraphy on. I'm just feeling worthless, and the tension's thick. And my stepmom is trying to make me feel better. She's like, wow, Chell, that's great. We should have that framed. Because you know when someone tries to make you feel better, it makes you feel that much worse? It's like, yeah, let's frame that, Wendy. We'll frame that. We'll put my wall here of all my failures and shortcomings in life. It'll be great. We'll put it right next to that one. What does that one say? DUI. Yeah, that was a good one. Shelly blew a 2.6. My brother's successful. He just bought a 3-bedroom house on the lake. He's a sales rep for Starbucks Coffee. That's his job. How difficult is that job? Selling Starbucks? It's like selling heroin. He's a pusher. And he's profiting in our addictions. Just bought a 3-bedroom house. I'm like, that's awesome. He just bought a house. I just bought a bag of weed. It's good weed, though. You guys smoke the weed here in Wanana? Over here, left side of the room, little grasshoppers over here. I used to smoke every day. I used to be like a huge stoner, like just loved it. You know what I mean? Like when you just want to forget about your life, that's why I love to get really stoned. You know what I mean? Yeah. Thank you. I mean really stoned, like autistic boy stoned. You're just rocking back and forth. This is good. I'm safe. I'm safe. I'm just tap and tap and tap. And then I watch the Neverending Story. Are you kidding me, Neverending Story? Bastion! Bastion! Call my name! Turn around! Tell me what you see! The answer to our never-ending story! Oh. Thanks, you guys. Thanks so much. It was a good flick. I got issues, guys. Let's talk about it. I'm short. I'm 5'7", which is f***ing annoying when you're a guy and you're short, because girls are so condescending to short guys. Girls always like to challenge me my height and remind me that I'm short. Like, I'm not aware of my proportions. I know that I'm 5'. Like, I'm reminded on a daily basis that I'm short, because this is the life of a 5'7-year-old. I sit down on the toilet, right, to take care of business, dropping a deuce, relaxing with my thoughts. This is my time. And every time, this is what happens. My legs swing on a toilet. I'm like, I'm a grown-up, and I'm swinging on it. This is not supposed to be a ride. And girls always like to challenge, girls I just meet challenge me in my height. Like, if I'm at a bar, they're like, wow. You're short. Like, that's an interesting way to open up a conversation. I'm like, how tall are you? I'm like, I don't know, 5'7". No, you're not. Because I'm 5'4½". And look at this. Come here. Stand next to me. Stand next to me. Look at this. We're right here. We're right here. I'm like, fine. I'm 2'11". What do you want from me? What is this argument about? And that's when I say, okay, how much do you weigh? She says, 120. I'm like, no. Stand next to me. Stand next to me. I weigh 180. You weigh at least 200, okay? You're fat. Is that mean? Thank you. It's not mean. You keep needling me. I'm going to strike like a furious Frodo, okay? And I'm swinging. I have a skin condition. I have a skin condition called seborrheic dermatitis, which means dandruff of the face. You ever heard of that? No, you haven't, because it's a fucking freak show. My face gets red and splotchy and scaly. It's a treat. I'm like, how did I get dandruff of the face? Like, where does this come from? So I asked my doctor. I'm like, what is this? He's like, well, what it is, couch. And I'll never forget this. He said, it's an excessive amount of yeast on your face. Basically, what you have is a yeast infection of the face. And I'm like, what are you talking about? How did I get a yeast infection of the face? Like, where has my face been? Thanks a lot, ladies. Thanks a lot. I am a giver. I am a giver. And that's what you give to me? Unacceptable. Unacceptable. First TMJ and now a yeast infection of the face? That's a lot of work, okay? Is Laura Ingalls from around here or something? Pepin, is that near here? Okay, I got a joke about Laura Ingalls. I get cold sores, which is awesome because it's like, whatever, it sucks. I take Valtrex for my cold sores, which is a pill that people take for genital herpes. That's my prescription. And they have the commercials on all the time. A pill that people take for genital herpes, and this is my favorite commercial. There's a girl and she's jump roping. And she's kickboxing. And she's swimming in a pool. She's like independent athletic herpes girl. And that's fine, but here's something as I'm watching this and this swimming. Get out of the pool. You're gross. You have herpes. You know what I mean? You take it to the creek, okay? That's what you do. You take it to the creek and you scrub, okay? You scrub. You scrub. You scrub like it's a little house in the prairie, okay? Because you're dirty, half pint. Yeah, no, that was a much better joke than what you guys... That's fucking... I love girls. I love independent girls. That's what turns me on. Do you know what I mean? That's what really turns me on is independent girls. I hate needy girls because I'm needy myself. And if you've ever seen two needy people together, you want to shoot them in the face, both, all right? But this is a true story. This is like a year ago. I took a dame to the cinema. That's how I talk, all right? I'm old-fashioned. She wore a lovely blouse. I wore some slacks, some trousers. We had some supper. And then we sat in the Davenport. And everything was fine until we got to the movie picture because she's one of those people... She's one of those people that looks to you to laugh. Do you know what I mean when I say that? Someone that looks to you... This is the most bizarre human behavior on the face of the planet. And guys and girls do it alike. Excuse me. But every time there was a funny scene, she this is what she did. She goes, ha, ha, ah. She would turn and look at me. And the first time, I'm like, yeah, ha, ha, that's funny. Let's watch the movie. That's what we're here for. 2 minutes later. Are you f***ing serious? You can't laugh by yourself. You're that needy. You need my eye contact to validate you in some weird, desperate... How needy is that? It was like a shower curtain in a cheap motel. Just clingy. And you can't escape. Have you ever showered in a cheap motel? Winona? Well, I have all the live long day, okay? And every time the shower curtain wants a piece of me like it's mating season, I'm just trying to wash myself with that gross piece of soap that reeks of dying old people. And here comes a curtain of shower like a haunted, horny ghost ready to rape and molest and pillage my body. Smothering. And like, I can't sit here for 90 minutes and have this chick look me and laugh every 2 minutes. Like, that's, I can't deal with that. And how do you end that? You can't say, can you stop looking at me and laugh? Because she's too stupid to realize what she's doing. So extreme measures, right? I'm going to sneeze in her face. And I did, you guys. I did. Because at that point, I knew that I was not into that chick. Like, it's, do you ever have those moments when you're with someone for the first couple dates and you're feeling it out and you're like, oh, yeah, this one's not for me. And you feel awkward. You're like, oh, I got to end it. And you feel awkward. And I love that. Because it's like being in a dream and you realize you're dreaming. You can do whatever you want to that person. I was making out with her and I was bored. I'm like, I should not be bored. So I'm just going to f*** with her. I'm going to work on my impressions. So I was kissing her. I'm like, you know what that is? That's a dying pony. It's pretty good. I know. It's pretty good. Because that's how she made me feel inside, okay? And I'm sorry, but I will not apologize. When I don't do comedy, I wait tables at the Bubba Gump Shrimp Company at the Mall of America. Really? Have you guys been there?
Yeah.
Okay, try waiting tables on a daily basis there and imagine what I see. Here's what I see. I see mangy trash. These people fucking troll in there with their fanny packs and their Green Bay Packers starter jackets. And their hair is matted down and greasy like a coyote that's been caught in a bear trap for 2 days waiting to die. They have no manners. They come in and they grab me. They grab my arm as I'm walking by. Who does that? How about manners? How about excuse me, please? Pardon me. Thank you. It's called manners, right? Scoop of sugar in a salty day. They grab my arm as I'm walking by. Don't grab me with your abusive, alcoholic, negative energy. I'm very sensitive. And they're just pissed from the get-go. Hey, what is this on the menu? I don't know what this is. What's Maui Maui? What's Maui Maui? That's what they say, and that's how they speak. I'm like, I don't know. Are you trying to say Hawaii? That's Hawaii. Do you mean Mahi Mahi? Is that what you're trying to say? That's a white, mild, flaky fish. You illiterate fuck. Don't grab me. What say you lose a Spider-Man t-shirt and get a tutor? That might help the situation. I wait tables with this guy. Everyone's experienced this guy in their lives. This is a guy that leers at women and he says foul, offensive things. Just that creepy guy. He's like, yeah, I would fuck the shit out of her. I would punish her. I don't know what his mom did to him, but I'm uncomfortable around this guy. And he's watching this girl, and this is honest God truth what he said. He was eating crackers. And this is what he said. He's just watching this girl. He's like, yeah. Crackers and pussy, that's all I need. How creepy is that? Like, that is, on a scale of 1 to 10, that's pretty creepy, right? It's like his mantra. It's like his eat, pray, love. I'm like, all right, that's cool. Go for it, man. Crackers and pussy. Live your dream. Who's ever waited tables here? By round of applause. Wow, okay. Have you ever waited on foreigners and Europeans? Oh, God damn, I love it. How did you enjoy it? It sucked balls. Why is that? Why did it suck balls? They tip like Europeans and foreigners complain that Americans that were culturally insensitive and ignorant, they always say that. They're hypocrites because they don't tip for shit. They don't learn that one custom when you come to the United States. You tip 20%. Every day, some pasty, gangly Brit comes in. Hello, hello, lovely. Yes, thank you. I'll have a fish and chips and a Coke with no ice, please. No ice. In my Coke. They never want ice. You know why? It's because their poop-stained marshmallow teeth are so frail and gummy. If an ice cube found its way in their mouth, it would tear through it like soggy toilet paper. It's a true story, you guys. True story. But it's Americans, too. Like, we take responsibility for ourselves, right? You guys tip 20%? Benoni. That has been my time, guys. Thanks so much. For coming out. And take care, Winona.
Thanks again to Shelby Organ and John Wilson for taking the time out to interview with us.
Thanks for listening to The Live Feed. The Live Feed is produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University. For more information on tonight's show, visit us at kqal.org.